The HVAC School Podcast is made possible by these great sponsors. Refrigeration Technologies at RefrigTech.com. Carrier and Carrier.com. Carrier has been a long-term sponsor of the podcast. They've made it possible very early on for us to do what we do, and they are the products that we sell day in and day out. Everything from single-stage equipment all the way up to the GreenSpeed Extreme, one of the most efficient products on the market today. Find out more about what Carrier has to offer and about becoming a Carrier dealer by going to Carrier.com. Diversitech at Diversitech.com. Mitsubishi Electric at MitsubishiComfort.com. While your technical skills may have gotten you hired, a lack of soft skills could just as easily get you fired. In many instances, service technicians are the only face-to-face contact the customer has with the company. Studies show that technicians who have excellent customer service skills can make more money, boost customer retention, and maximize customer referrals. To help you improve your customer service or soft skills, take the courses more HVACR professionals rely on than any other with Steve Kasha. Steve Kasha is the most widely published and quoted authority on the customer service industry, and his courses are easily accessible on the HVACR Learning Network. Check out his courses and others in the HLN, the Ultimate Learning Experience, at hvacr.elearn.network and save 10% on e-learning purchases with the discount code HVACSchool22. Again, that's HVACSchool22 at hvacr.elearn.network.
And now, the man whose body odor has been deemed an ozone-depleting substance, according to the Montreal Protocol, Brian Orr.
Hey, this is the HVAC School Podcast. In this episode, Nathan Orr, my brother, talks live from the floor of AHR. The audio is not great, but we do our best with it. It's kind of a noisy place. But he's talking with Falcon Air about three-phase energy savings. So how you can save, especially with three-phase compressors. And they have a pretty interesting product. So I think you're going to enjoy it. Three-phase energy savings with Falcon Air.
This is Nathan with the HVAC School Podcast. We're here at AHR 2022. I'm talking to Christopher McKellif, if I'm saying that correct, from Falcon Air Incorporated. We were not scheduled to talk to him, but just sort of ran into him. They're describing their product, and then I thought I wanted to grab him on. So welcome, Christopher.
Yeah, thank you, Nathan, for the opportunity.
Before we get going and just have a conversation, do you want to give us the elevator speech on what is Falcon Air?
So Falcon Air is an innovation company. So my background is HVAC. I've been working with DC inverter for over 25 years. I had the opportunity to be working with a manufacturer actually developing three-pipe system back in 2001. So what I created is I've seen the need that we needed something for fixed-speed compressors. Obviously, it's not as easy as just take out the compressor and put a DC inverter. Costs and complications of controls. So what I've created here is a software that can make that now possible. So any three-phase compressor, whether it's scroll, reciprocating, any brand, you can buy a compatible VFD with our software, which we have seven brands, ABB, Schneider, Yaskawa, Fuji, Tyco, Westinghouse, and Invertec. And the other one is Rockwell, Allen Brandley. And you choose your VFD drive, your preference, we'll give you our software control unit, and basically you change your compressor to a three-phase.
And so the important thing to say here is that this is strictly for three-phase compressors.
It has to be three-phase. So your three-phase becomes an inverter compressor.
Okay, so it's a three-phase compressor and you help select the appropriate VFD for the application.
Exactly. Right? So depending what amperage, we would recommend what VFD size you need. Normally, because it's compressors and compressors we're dealing with torque, VFD manufacturers would tell us to increase by 20% of the actual running amps of that compressor.
Right. And just because I know from somebody you're hearing this, they can think, that sounds super complicated. I've sized some VFDs in different applications.
Yeah.
It literally is that simple. All that you need to know is the voltage and the maximum amp draw of the compressor and decide what percentage of oversize you need to guarantee that the VFD isn't going to be under stress.
Correct.
That's pretty much all that you need for selection there.
Correct.
So who do you see as your target demographic? Who is it that you're looking to roll this product out to?
Our, what we call low-hanging fruit is the refrigeration world. They're all fixed speed. None of them are inverters. Some of them are coming out now from manufacturers, inverter from the factory, but they're fairly new. So the low-hanging fruit would be refrigeration. Those are the biggest consumers. They're running 24/7. And then we can go on HVAC, roof package units, data centers, anywhere where the consumption is more than 60% running in a whole year.
So, I mean, pretty much anything that's going to be three-phase to begin with, where there isn't already adoption of OEM
inverter
technology or something like that. So what do you see, an interesting part of this to me, because this does fall within my wheelhouse in our contracting company, Kalos. Yeah. So an interesting thing to me would be, what other options are people already employing more frequently than...
Yeah, so let's talk about benefits. So as a contractor, you have at the moment a compressor controlled by pressure switch. So your system doesn't have what actually the compressor is doing. All it's going to know that it's got a high pressure switch, it's got a low pressure switch, and that's all you can see. There's no protection electrically. So if you have an electrical surge, if you have a loss of a power supply, or you have a reduced voltage of your power supply, there's no protection. So with our product implemented, because you're installing a VFD now, you are increasing the protection for your compressors for your customer. Because now, apart from everything that can go wrong with your power supply, voltage, loss of phases, or anything like that, now we're increasing an added protection, because with our control, we're actually looking at the discharge temperature and the suction temperature. Now, we know that when your system starts to lose refrigerants, it doesn't necessarily shut down on your low pressure cutout, because it hasn't lost enough to actually go down as much as your low pressure cutout. So it will keep on running, but unfortunately, it's running inefficiently. While with our control units, because now we're looking at your discharge temperature and your suction temperature, we're going to know that because that's what normally happens when you start to lose refrigerant, but not enough to lose, cut it out on your low pressure cutout, your discharge temperature, not your pressure, but discharge temperature increases. So we're going to know that's going to happen. So because we are looking at your discharge temperature, we'll try to adjust your compressor speed, not to still give you the capacity that you need, but in the same time, try to protect your compressor. Because obviously, if you're losing refrigerant, your suction temperature might be warmer than usual. And the only cooling that your compressor winding can have is through your cold suction coming in. But again, if then we cannot do anything because your refrigerant loss is much that we expected, then we would shut down your compressor and throw a fault. And that's how you're protecting your customer from not losing produce, because it might, instead of taking him 3 weeks to know that he's started to lose refrigerant, he's going to know within 2 days. So that's going to help your customer not losing produce during those 3 weeks until he actually realizes that he lost produce.
And that's a good point, although it sounds in this application that we're talking about, like what, if I was in the field, what I would call one-to-one refrigeration, meaning that there's one condensing unit that's feeding one or possibly two indoor evaporator coils.
Yeah.
How would this work with, say, a grocery store where you have parallel refrigeration? And so you're probably not going to pick up on, if you hit the point that there's already not enough refrigerant that you're getting hot, there's a major problem. So in parallel refrigeration, where you're rarely going to hit, well, certainly, but there would be other things letting you know long before this happened that you were all the way out of refrigerant.
Yes.
Is that failure output, I know there is a machine learning or AI component to your product. Does it adapt to that reality where it's going to say no, that the discharge is too hot and you might have something wrong with your valve plates or something where you're bypassing hot gas? Is it customizable on that level?
It is to that level, because so every compressor that you're going to install, because it's a retrofit, every compressor is going to be a different suction and discharge temperature, because you don't know what your compressor lifespan has been already installed, so it's losing some of its power efficiency. So there's a lot of factors. So on commissioning of our product on the first day, we would require you to take your temperature on your discharge and temperature on your suction before you install our product. So those are our starting points. So from then onwards, our algorithm will start working on those starting points. However, it knows that it's going to have to change because ambient temperature changes, your pumping efficiency starts to be lost, and most probably be loss of refrigerant somewhere in the rail as well. So we would not shut down your compressor straight away, but when we see that it's went to an extreme from where it started, then yes, we would throw off for it. But we have already installations on multiple what we call refrigeration racks, where there are 6 compressors in line, and we would do normally 4, not all 6, because some of the compressors are there as a spare. So depending what loading your system has got.
From an install standpoint, if somebody says, hey, I decided that I wanted to do this, I'll talk you through what I'm hearing. You can tell me if I'm dumb. I'm definitely dumb, but don't say it too mean or hurt my feelings. So we would buy your product, which is, it's one module per compressor, correct?
Correct.
And then you would need to provide some sort of a VFD for each compressor.
Correct.
And then you'd be interrupting that circuit, so breaking the circuit with the VFD post-contactor.
After contactor, yes.
Right, so you normally feed the power. And so in that feed from the contactor to your compressor, somewhere in line there,
yes,
that's where you would break it with your VFD from an installation standpoint.
Correct.
And then why don't you walk us through, if you were to say, hey, I'm purchasing this packet, I know there's a huge software component to it, what comes with that?
It's simple. All you need is a VFD and our product. Our product communicates with the VFD via Modbus. So it's just basically a 3-core cable. And when you said post-contactor, so what happens in a VFD, because a VFD, you can't put it on a contactor, you would need to take the power supply going into the contactor, you go direct into the VFD. From the other side of the contactor, that's the compressor, you go into the VFD, and then you're going to have an empty contactor, which is derived and controlled by a thermostat and all your other safeties. So the beauty of our product, we take our signal to bring on your compressor from that contactor. So in other words, if any of your safeties or your control doesn't want to bring on your compressor, it won't bring it on. But once you tell us from that contactor that, yes, I want to bring on compressor number one, we would start it up, we would ramp it up and down, but we would know what speed we would run it up to and down, depending your suction and discharge temperature. That's where our technology and our algorithm is worked on. Those two temperature separates.
So if, for whatever reason, something is going wrong with the VFD or your, because once again, I'm starting to think through this, through. I'm working on a system.
Yes.
And you just turn it into bypass.
Yes.
From there, it will operate exactly like
just
it
as a normal compressor.
Right, just as a normal compressor, completely without your, your input to it. So that's not a consideration there if you have an issue with.
No, there is.
Then you just put
because
it bypass.
You have a normal fixed speed compressor, you just put it back to fixed speed.
But when you throw it into bypass, you're just right back to the normal fixed speed compressor. So it's not a technology that has any real significance of increasing service load.
It's
unless something went wrong with your VFD,
and
which we all know.
And the beauty of our product, we don't intrude into your existing controls. So you don't need to go back into your controls and readjust anything on your controls. It's just basically bypass it and that's it. It becomes as it was before.
The other thing that I would like to point out is there is no need in any of this to cut into the refrigeration circuit.
That's very important.
You're just, because it is temperature probes, you're
temperature
just
probes.
Installing them, insulating them. Yes?
Yes, we have to insulate them.
Installing, insulating, run the wire back to wherever your
control
is mounted, and you're good to go from that standpoint. Then it's just commissioning it from a software standpoint.
Correct.
How does that commissioning work? Is that, how would the technician access that software to make sure it's completely simple?
So on our operation installation manual, that comes with the smart compressor control package. Depending what drive you are installing, you would have the operation manual for that drive. So if it's an ABB, for example, you're going to have a list of parameters on the operation installation manual to input into the drill. So in other words, the technician doesn't need to go through the 1,000-page book and programs and settings of that drive. All he needs to do is look at our operation installation manual. We put down the parameters that's going to affect and that we need to adjust, and that's all. So some drives would require not more than 20 parameters to be inputted into the drive. Some of them don't even need 10 parameters to be inputted into the drive. And then on the SCC, we input the temperature that we took before we switched off, the suction temperature and the discharge temperature, and that's all.
And so a fair point to make here is from an installation standpoint, before you do anything, you would want to make sure whatever equipment you're working on yes. is in relatively good condition.
To be honest, we're looking at energy efficiency, right? So energy efficiency, it doesn't mean that you just put an inverter and you're going to expect to save energy. You have to start from scratch. So to make your system energy efficient, first of all, you need to have a clean condenser, make sure you have a clean evaporator. That's part of your energy efficiency protocol and part of your maintenance. So when you have a properly maintained system, which is nearly working already efficient, it's going to add our product and then make it more efficient. So in other words, because some people think, oh yeah, I'm going to put a drive on, I'm going to start saving a lot of money. If you put a drive on a system, let's say a roof package in it, and you just decide to open the door wide open, you're not going to save any money. Just because you've installed a drive, and also, you're not going to save money because you still need to make sure that the thermostat is reaching its set point and shutting down your compressor. It's like DC inverter systems. If you buy the most high-tech, more efficient system on the planet and you install it somewhere and you just leave the door open, actually, believe it or not, that DC inverter system is going to consume more energy than actually if you had a fixed speed system.
Right, because it has slightly higher capacity. So you're just going to be running faster while wasting.
Exactly.
Is there any issues that you have with oil return when you're cycling?
That's a very good question.
A system.
So our algorithm, like I said, because it's derived and done on the DC inverter setup, as you know, every DC inverter system has got an oil return sequence. So at one point, it's going to rev to high speed to bring back the oil after it's been running on low speed for a certain period of time. Our algorithm works exactly the same. So if your compressor has been running on low speed for a certain period of time, it's going to run an oil return sequence. So basically what it does, it runs your compressor up to high speed again and bring back the oil into the oil cell, compressor cell.
And then the other question that I had, which is more of a curiosity for myself, right, is that obviously for those who don't understand with a VFD, really all that you're doing yes. is you're changing the hertz.
Like exactly.
Leaving the voltage the same, exactly. You're just changing exactly. frequency, which is what the F is
exactly.
for. And every component has a, in general, as you lower that, it moves slower, you speed it up, it goes faster, but they have a curve there of where there's efficiency gains. As you get super slow, you lose where, yes, it is still consuming less power, but the amount of work that it's doing hits a point that it's not an efficiency savings. And then on the high end, generally speaking, you're very rarely cycling something to faster than 60 hertz. Not that you can't, there's plenty of things that you can without causing any damages, but that's the rating on the piece yes. of equipment. So what kind of ranges are we looking at from a hertz standpoint?
Okay, because we're dealing with fixed speed compressors, they're not designed to run on low hertz. We have our limitations. So on a square compressor, the lower that you can go on is 45 hertz, up to 60 hertz. So that is the limitation on a square compressor. Believe it or not, modulating it between 45 hertz and 60 hertz, we are still seeing over 35% of efficiency. On a reciprocating, however, a lot of brands out there will tell you, oh, you can go down to 25 hertz. We don't even go down there. We stop it at 35 hertz, so we go down between 35 and 60 hertz. Now, why don't we do what the manufacturer tells us or recommendation? Because we didn't just do this product and we said, oh, okay, let's see what's going to happen. We have over 3 years of R&D that we're saying, okay, because our first priority, believe it or not, it's not just saving your energy, it's protection for your compressor. So why would we run a compressor which has a high torque, as we know, down to 25 hertz to save 2%? Well, we know that 25 hertz, it could be dangerous, especially on an older compressor. So what we've decided is we are stopping our compressors down to 35 hertz. And like I said, 35 hertz to 60 hertz is more than enough, because above 35% savings, there's no other product out there that can give it a finger compressor.
The other thing that I wanted to hit on is there are alternative products that people are putting into to prevent compressor cycling and for efficiency reasons that you're retrofitting into older, particularly in the realm that I work in, which is grocery refrigeration. There's a lot of products out there. And I can hear in my head the technician objection to, oh, well, BFDs are complicated to diagnose, which is not really true. The controls feeding them are typically what is complicated to diagnose. And then like, oh, well, this seems like a lot of work. And what I would like to say is that there is a certain work component whipping in and out for your VFD. The VFD installation is the part that there's going to be some work to. It's not necessarily any more time consuming or complicated than putting in a digital unloader and putting in a digital unloading component.
Much less.
There's a significant less work, and the cost is not going to be of the actual componentry. I'm not sure which way they would end up being from an expense, but it's not like one is twice the price of the other one. It's going to be a similar expense, and you aren't having to open up a compressor and put something in.
Cover a refrigerator.
And it's not going to also make that terrible noise that unloading makes where you walk through and as a technician, you're like, ah, I think something's wrong. This doesn't seem for rack rooms that are made out of all digitally unloaded scrolls.
Yes.
I can't stand working in them because how would I ever know that something's wrong?
Yes.
Because everything sounds wrong all the time.
Yes.
And there is a vibration quality, vibration equals wear, equals rub outs, where you don't really get that with VFDs. Has there been any issue, but speaking of that, I'm just thinking through the issues I've had with VFDs. Have you ever had any problems with harmonics?
Yeah, so harmonics, depending what drive manufacturer you're working with. So I would say, I'm not going to say brands, but the choice that we're giving the industry is we've got seven different brands. And if harmonics can be an issue, you choose a better brand.
No, I know ABB is pushing out some, because I don't mind saying manufacturers. I know they're pushing out a lot of technology to deliberately prevent harmonics.
Exactly. So there are brands who are concentrating on that. You just choose those brands if harmonics are going to be an issue.
And also to my previous point, though, are harmonics occasionally an issue with a VFD? Yes, it is an issue.
It could be.
But is vibration-related issues from alternative products also creating issues? Yes, and in my experience, much more frequency.
Yes. However, harmonics, a lot of people are scared with harmonics that can damage the bearings. And the other advantage that you have on a compressor, not like another pump, for example, a water pump or a fan motor, is you have your bearings basically being oiled continuously. So that's an advantage when it comes to compressors for harmonics, because I know that there are harmonics issues on a pump, which has no oil on the bearings, and on a fan motor.
No, I know. And to your point, the few times that I've seen major harmonics issues, it was always where you were running multiple fans off of a single VFD.
Correct.
Which makes it very hard for a lot of reasons, which I'm not smart enough to explain. Multiple devices going through greatly increases the chances of you having issues with harmonics.
Correct.
Or doing anything to mitigate those.
And the biggest reason is your bearings, especially your bearings are dry.
Right.
On a fan motor. There's no oil circulating around, not like a compressor.
And so I know you'd floated it out there from an energy efficiency standpoint. You're saying there's about a 35% increase in efficiency.
About 35%, yes.
Does that, because in energy and energy consumption, there's a lot of similar terms used. When you say an increase in efficiency, does that correlate to that same savings in consumption of energy?
It is consumption of energy. So when we say savings, let me tell you this. So some people think that, oh, I know what they're doing. They're slowing down the compressors, but the compressors working for longer periods of time. We're not doing that. That's why we are saying we're saving you up to 35%. The reason we're saving you actually more than 35% is because, as you know, you have an expansion valve and it's throttling and trying to slow down or controlling liquid flowing into your evaporator not to get flooded, correct? So what we are doing, we're taking advantage of that. Having a compressor running at full whack, you slow down the compressor and now your expansion valve can open fully and have the right amount that's only needed, not what you have massive liquid behind the expansion valve trying to push through and the expansion valve saying, hey, I don't need that much liquid because you're going to flood it.
And it should, if I understand the product.
Yes.
It's possible that I don't entirely. This should also, though, it should prevent some cycling, correct?
Of course.
That's the goal, that you aren't turning the compressor off and on as frequently.
It would.
You're getting longer run times.
Longer
run
times.
Lower.
Longer run times. And even on HVAC, when it comes to air conditioning, it's going to improve your humidity as well.
Because you're being able to keep that, particularly in commercial spaces where for outdoor air purposes, you have to run continuous fan.
Exactly.
When you're running continuous fan with no cooling, you're basically delivering untreated in our climate in Florida, super humid air into a space. And so the higher percentage of the time you can keep cooling happening at the same time as your fresh air, you're going to get much greater humidity control. No, I mean, I think this was a super fun conversation. I appreciate you swinging by and talking to me. And I'll be in touch, both from HVAC School and from Kalos. And so I really appreciate the conversation. Thanks for sure.
Thank you very much. Thanks for your time.
Big thanks to Falcon Air and everybody else who took the time to talk to us at AHR. We will be at AHR 2023 in Atlanta. Find out more by going to ahrexpo.com. My wife asked me if I could stop singing the lyrics to Wonderwall. So I said maybe. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time on the HVAC School Podcast.
Thanks for listening to the HVAC School Podcast. You can find more great HVACR education material and subscribe to our short daily tech tips by going to HVACRschool.com. If you enjoy the podcast, would you mind hopping on iTunes or the podcast app and leave us a review? We would really appreciate it. See you next week on the HVAC School Podcast.